in late summer or early fall, I'm not exactly sure of the date or time, in the year of 2006, I made a critical mistake that precipitated a conversion experience in my life, one of a few conversion experiences. And by that, I mean an experience that altered my perspective in a permanent way. I don't mean to say completely and utterly in that very moment or second, but caused me to look at life and the world and all the people and things that were surrounding me in a very different way. In order to tell you about that conversion experience, I need to back up a little bit. I need to back up to the very first Sunday of June in 2006. The first Sunday of June in 2006, I said goodbye to a position that I held, associate rector at All Saints Church in Beverly Hills, California. I was leaving a pretty doggone cushy job in order to venture out into the Venice Beach, Santa Monica wilderness to plant a church. The church, as I described it then and I'll describe it now, was an Episcopal church established and built for a constituency of people who wouldn't otherwise darken the door of one of our traditional parishes. Or another way that I described it is people were like, well, what's this new church like, Jimmy? I would say, well, it's kind of like a hippie rock and roll Episcopal church. On that Sunday, saying warm wishes, giving high fives and hugs to the community which had nurtured and supported and received me into the belly and heart of that parish and my family over the course of 5 years, it was a difficult Sunday morning. It was one that was filled with a multitude of bittersweet emotions, even as I felt clearly drawn to this new work. I was certain that that was the work in front of me, no doubt. But that experience of leaving that job upset or put our family into significant transition. I went home from that Sunday morning to a house where my wife and our son had lived for about 2 weeks. We were also in the midst of a remodel of that house, so it was torn to pieces and there were building supplies everywhere. I was leaving a stable job to take a job that had about 90 days of funding in the bank. It was both a terrifying and somewhat courageous adventure. That evening, we were welcoming our friends, Mary and David, to dinner to our house, where the plan was to cook steaks for them on the grill and everything else on the grill because everything in our house was torn to pieces. Now, I also need to tell you that my mother, and some of you in this room know or knew my mother, was also a somewhat Southern woman who loved to entertain. What do I mean by telling you that story? I mean to tell you that I have inherited a temperament around entertaining people in our house, quite honestly. So if I were to pull the curtain back a little bit on the Bartz family household before a dinner party, what I would show you is a mom who was pretty hard to live around until the door opened and the big smile came on her face and she was like, welcome to our warm and happy home. There was a lot of like, boys, I said for the 10th time, clean up your rooms, help me clean the kitchen, help, you know, put the laundry away in the laundry room. And I've inherited that temperament. So when I got home, even somewhat emotionally wrung out, and looked into the backyard and saw building materials everywhere, I sort of went into a bit of a panic. I changed out of my clergy garb into some flip-flops and some shorts and a short-sleeve shirt, that kind of Southern California uniform, And I began to move things into spaces that were both being added and remodeled so that we would have some semblance of order when we welcomed our dear friends, Mary and David, into our house, entertaining friends in our new house for the very first time. Part of the supplies that I was moving around were cabinets that were yet to be installed and bookshelves that were in boxes, big, somewhat heavy, but very awkward items. And as I was in our backyard, in a doorway that had been cut for French doors, the French doors not yet installed, and the stairs not yet built, I lost my balance and fell to the ground. When I hit the ground and sort of regained consciousness in a nanosecond, I knew that something was not right, that something had gone terribly wrong. And I did what we do in those situations, like when we have a big smash-up yard sale on the ski hill. I started from the top of my head, making that inventory down to my toes, trying to figure out what's wrong with my body. And when I reached my left ankle, I was like, aha, there is the thing that has gone wrong. When I looked down at my left ankle, an ankle that should have been pointing right was pointing left. And honestly, like, I didn't feel much pain in that moment because I think the shock of an accident like that, something happens to us physiologically, but I was experiencing like a little upset of the tummy. Like, whoa, this is bad. Before I was fully aware of what happened, my wife Cindy was standing over me, and I could see her face, and the first thing that Cindy said was, "You just broke your ankle." And I took in a deep breath, and I said, "I know." And the next thing that Cindy said was, "I heard it." It was bad. It was bad. It was one of those moments where you begin to do all the calculations and strategy. And I mean the calculations and strategy for the immediate moment of like, okay, somebody call Mary and David and tell them we're not having dinner tonight. Okay, can you get your car back here into the backyard far enough so that maybe I could hop in and get in the front seat of that gray Toyota Prius while you drive me to the hospital? Like, well, and then also doing the calculations of like, I have just left a cushy job in which I was completely settled, very fluent, and well-funded to a new job where I have no idea what I'm doing and really only 90 days of funding to move forward. It was a tough spot. And in that moment, in the immediacy of the experience, we human beings begin to adjust our expectations. If you're anything like me, I'm like, well, okay, like here's the to-do list and all the things that need to be done. And the order in which we will do them will be different because of the result of this terrible accident. When in truth, the reality is like, that stuff is just not going to be done because it's just not possible when you experience an event like that. Cindy was able to back her car into the grass. I was able, probably somewhat foolishly, to hop into her car. And as she was driving me to the hospital, I called my older brother, Reed. Now, Reed, at the time, was one of the team doctors for the University of Nebraska Cornhuskers. He is a hotshot orthopod. And what I knew is that Reed, or Reed's network, probably not Reed himself, but Reed's network would know who the ankle guy or gal was. You have this sense, especially if you live here in Jackson, that there's always a guy or a gal. There's someone for the wrist, there's someone for the ankle, there's someone for the elbow and the shoulder and the knee and the hip. And that's the person you want in this moment when things are, you know, bad. It's never good to break something, but sometimes you break something so badly that you want an experienced, skilled hand. So fast forward, over the course of the next few days, my brother Reed was able to connect me to that guy. And after some negotiations and using all the favors in the favor jar and haggling with the insurance company, I got in to have surgery where my ankle was repaired. I remember waking up in the recovery room with Cindy there at my bedside and the doctor saying, like, well, look, here's the deal. It's really bad. It was worse than we thought it was. We did fix it, but you're going to be non-weight-bearing for 4 months. It was a hard pill to swallow. What I also didn't tell you is we were also in the middle of the process. We were awaiting a FedEx package from the Chinese government so that we would have permission to travel to China where we would adopt our beloved daughter, Jade. I mean, the Bartz family, the whole family, not just poor, pitiful me, but the whole family was turned upside down and upset over this accident. I'm not unaware that Jung says there are no accidents, there are no coincidences. But at this time, that was not a reality that I was willing to face. A few weeks later, after my ankle was repaired, sometime in late summer or early fall, I had that experience where I made that critical mistake which led to this conversion experience about which I intend to preach today. I know, it's a long way of getting there. And I'm sorry, not sorry. We started this new church, this funky, hippie, rock and roll Episcopal church in a jazz club. And a part of the process was that every Sunday morning, we met at a mini storage, a group of volunteers and a number of somewhat empty SUVs. And the volunteers would take everything out of the mini storage, load it into the SUVs. I mean, everything you needed for church, a sound system and chairs and musical equipment and pillows and pads for a church nursery and baby gates and books and toys and coffee makers and coffee cups and creamer and sugar, everything, a mountain of donuts, always a mountain of donuts. Somewhat frustrating that we don't have a donut shop in Jackson, honestly. Every Sunday, all of that stuff went from the mini storage into SUVs, driven to this jazz club, unloaded, set up. We would do church. We would break everything down, load it back into the SUVs, drive it back to the mini storage, and put it away for the next week. So I'm there at maybe 5 minutes after seven, doing my thing on crutches, watching this crew around me move all of the things that we need for church out of the mini storage and into the SUVs. I crutched over to our storage unit. I put a pillow that we used for the nursery in my mouth, and I began crutching toward one of the SUVs. As I came around the corner in the labyrinth of the mini storage, you've been in these places where, like, you're winding around and you're like, how do I get out of here again? And there are lots of different hallways. As I came around the corner, I was met face to face by a very dear friend, a man named Jamie Bennett. And as I came around the corner, Jamie was standing there looking at me with a sort of astonished look on his face. And he just said to me in a straightforward way, he said, "Jimmy, what are you doing?" And I responded to Jamie with the pillow in my mouth. I said, "I'm helping." To which Jamie responded, "If we need this kind of help from you at this time, we are in real trouble." It was in that very moment, with those straightforward and honest words, that I experienced a conversion. I was reminded in that moment that I am not a shepherd. I am a member of a flock. And the flock around me means that we share in the work and the mission and the ministry in an interdependent way. What I am meaning to tell you is that my temperament, and it persists a bit today, there's still remnants and a hangover of this reality, but my temperament was to always give, 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 but almost never receive. I had a very hard time setting my system off of sin and to receive. Now, I'm not speaking for everybody in this church, but I know that some of you have that same temperament. We have this wonderful gift, this beautiful reading from the lectionary today of the 23rd Psalm. It's one of the most well-known pieces of Scripture, and I believe it's one of the most well-known pieces of Scripture because of the simplicity and honesty of the poem itself. When I was in graduate school, I had a wonderful professor of Hebrew Scriptures named Ellen Davis. Ellen was also my advisor, and in moments of struggle, particularly if they were in the afternoon or the evening, when I would come to Ellen to deliver my complaint or my frustration or my struggle to her threshold, she would typically respond, "Take two Psalms and call me in the morning." It was wonderful advice. The two Psalms that I would take were the 23rd Psalm and my favorite, the 121st. And I would find that those Psalms, particularly the 23rd Psalm, would remind me that I was being held by a competent, loving, nurturing shepherd. The image itself, which maybe we don't pay too much attention to as we recite that psalm, but the image itself of having, and to remind us, like, this is a people who live in the desert, to be reminded that God, our good shepherd, spreads out a table before us in the company of those who trouble us, that there is ample and abundant food available, both literal and metaphorical, for us to consume, even in the presence of those we struggle to get along with, to know that we were anointed with oil in a climate, both literal and metaphorical, where we are dry and cracking, to know that in the desert, we have a cup that runs over. It's a beautiful and sustaining metaphor for we humans who are making our way through our lives. It's a gorgeous tool. It's such a gorgeous tool that both the Jewish and Christian traditions have taken this psalm and brought it into the ritualized experience of congregations of people. Our Jewish siblings use it on the Sabbath The 23rd Psalm is part of the Kiddush, which is the blessing of the wine at the Sabbath meal. It's also read at the burial of most Jewish people. And in our Christian tradition, we heard it read at burial all the time, both as a reminder that the loved one who we have lost to death is well cared for by a good shepherd, but also a reminder to you and me that we are not abandoned in our grief. Rather, we are comforted and accompanied by that we are partners with a good shepherd, a loving God who intends to provide for us in miraculous, generous, and loving ways. It is a beautiful tool that we can lean on. Now, I want to say two more things about the psalm itself. The first thing is what do we use that thing for? Now, one thing that you're never going to hear me say in church is like, well, John, you just got to have faith. And you're not going to hear me say that because it's never worked for me. Like, I've always needed just like a little bit more. Like, what does that mean? Like feeling those wheels like spinning in the gravel. Like, you know there's a potential for traction there, but you don't know exactly how you're going to get it. So you're never going to hear that from me. But what I would tell you, and this is the story of Psalm 23. What I would tell you in that moment where you are feeling lost, in that moment, I would just invite you to make the human move, which we can all make, of stopping, taking a breath, and opening your mind and your heart, both at the same time, for the possibility, just the possibility. I'm not asking you to see something clearly. I'm not demanding that you see the hand of God at work in the world. I'm just asking you to invite the possibility that something is happening around you that is sustaining you that you may not see. And then step back and just see what happens. See what happens around you. See who happens around you. That's my advice for faith, for opening up and just giving creation and the cosmos that swirls around us the possibility that something unseen is happening around you. And the second thing that I want to leave you with this morning is about my own conversion experience. It's about the flock. You see, you are not alone. I am not alone. I'm never alone. If we have heard the psalmist's voice in the 23rd Psalm as just you and the good shepherd making your way through a challenging time, I would encourage you not to think of the object of that psalm as you, but rather to think of it as y'all, as we, as us. We are making our way through the valley of the shadow of death. We are making our way to a table that has been prepared in the midst of those who we struggle to connect with, and all of our heads are anointed with oil, and our collective cups are running over. You see, even when you are alone, even when you are that lost sheep, the good shepherd leaves the 99 to find you or me or any of the rest of us, no matter if we have put ourselves in that position or not, to find us and return us to the flock, which is meant to nurture and care for our needs, all of our needs. And just to be sure, you're not hearing the voice of a mediocre parent or mentor that kind of didn't get grace. The shepherd does not put the sheep on the shoulders and walk that sheep back to the flock saying, like, I told you not to run away and you weren't paying attention. And there is no shaming voice there. In that triptych of parables, the lost sheep, the lost coin, and the lost son, we are simply greeted and embraced in the most beautiful and loving ways by a God who is generous and loving and caring and wants the best for each of us. Church, if you find yourself in a moment of struggle, if you find yourself in a season or era of isolation, remember that you are a part of a flock. If that is too much to remember, take one psalm, the 23rd psalm, and call us in the morning. Amen.